It's 8 p.m. Stay with us. Outbeat Radio is next.
Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my wife and co-host Sheridan Gold. This is Women's History Month, and tonight we are so excited to have our special guest, Mateel Rothschild and Peg Cruikshank. Hey.
Hey, Mateel.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Hi, Peg.
Hi. Hi.
All right, so we met Mateel and her partner Joni last year at a poetry reading at Art Flare, which is a women's art collective in Sebastopol, and we immediately hit it off with both of them, and we've spent this last year getting to know each other. And Mateel is quite the community organizer, and when she moved to San Francisco in 1979, she began small groups of LGBTQ people to discuss senior housing, of which there was none at the time. But listen to this. 38 years after her hard work, her dream is happening. The grand opening of the LGBTQ Senior Housing Project in San Francisco is having their open house on March 23rd. That's in 2.5 weeks, people. Isn't that something? Congratulations, Mateel. We can't wait to hear all about how that happened, how it transpired, and your piece of history with it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And you have the opportunity to talk afterwards. Peg has been friends with Mateel since 1979. And she's out visiting her dear friends, Mateel and Joni. And Joni is sitting over there, and Donna. Hello, Donna and Joni. Partners of Mateel and Peg. So they're out visiting, and Peg wrote a book, and it was the first book. It's called The Lesbian Path, and it's the first book where lesbians were able to say their names. Their true names were written in the book. So we are so excited, and Peg has a whole list full of.
Accomplishments.
I mean, I can't even go into them. So when we come back from news and events, we're going to learn all about all of those accomplishments.
Thanks, Diana.
Yeah, from both of you. So welcome, welcome, welcome. But now we have news and events with Greg Moralia.
I have found Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of March 5th, 2017. On Tuesday last week, the Arkansas Senate endorsed a long-shot effort to push amending the U.S. Constitution to effectively ban gay marriage and abortion, a move one Republican lawmaker said is needed to overturn rulings from the nation's highest court. The majority Republican chamber approved by a 19-9 vote a resolution calling for a federal constitutional convention to take up an amendment that would define marriage as between a man and a woman. A separate resolution calling for an amendment effectively declaring that life begins at conception passed on a vote of 18-9. Republican Senator Jason Rappert, who sponsored the resolution, said, quote, "This is a day where the Arkansas Senate stood up for life and stood up for natural marriage between a man and a woman, and will also encourage people around the nation," end quote. The resolutions which now head to the House are modeled after an effort among Republicans nationwide to call for a convention of the states to take up a federal balanced budget amendment. 28 states, including Arkansas, have passed balanced budget convention resolutions. Rappert said that he didn't know if any states had passed similar resolutions on gay marriage or abortion. The Arkansas proposal would need at least 33 other states to agree for a convention to be held and 38 states to ratify the amendments. The measures are advancing months after Republicans expanded their majorities in both chambers of the legislature and come as social conservatives are securing victories in the legislature. Arkansas lawmakers have already approved a ban on a common second trimester abortion procedure, and a bathroom bill targeting transgender people has also been introduced. And in a similar conversation, Missouri state senators voted down a proposal last week to ban discrimination based on gender identity and sexual orientation. Democratic State Senator Jill Shoup's amendment would have banned discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people and covered employment, housing, and public accommodations. In an earlier debate, Shoup argued its passage would have shown that the people of Missouri, quote, care about treating people fairly, end quote, and provided LGBT people with equal rights. Lawmakers voted 20-10 against it. And in Kansas, beginning this week, transgender students in the Derby School District will no longer be allowed to use bathrooms matching their gender identity. By a vote of 5-2, Derby School Board members decided to reverse a procedure instituted last spring, which followed a federal directive from President Obama. Board members voting in favor Monday said they heard significant opposition from community members over the past year who worried that allowing transgender students wider access to bathrooms raised privacy concerns for other students. Board member Rick Coleman, who supported the change, said, quote, "This realigns the procedure with the culture and values of the larger community in Derby. If we have students that require distinct services, we as a district need to address those on an individual basis and not take away the rights of other students," end quote. The decision came after a rollback of federal guidelines issued by the Trump administration last week. Beginning Monday, students with special restroom needs, including transgender students, will be encouraged to make arrangements with school administrators. That could include using a private restroom in the school nurse's office. Liz Hammer, co-founder of the Wichita chapter of GLSEN, said she was disappointed with the board's decision. She said, quote, "When you give trans students protections, you show them that you value and respect them and want them to feel safe in your care. And you set an example for the rest of the school and community as a whole that valuing and respecting each other is the norm and expectation. When you take away those protections, you undo all of that," end quote. For a calendar of LGBT news and events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And for all the latest LGBT news headlines we're following, go to our website at outbeatnews.com. For KRCB's Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. And we're in studio this evening with Mateo Rothschild and Peg Cruikshank. So welcome back, everybody.
Thank you.
You're here. Hi.
Hey, so since you are here visiting your best friend, one of your friends.
Peg,
you're visiting Mateo.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about the relationship, just to get the audience all warmed up a little bit about who you are and who you are as friends.
And how you met.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mateo. Why don't you start?
Well, I'm really glad we're here together, me and Peg, with Di and Cher tonight, because it is Women's History Month, which is good for us. Both of us have been involved in trying to get things changed. And also, this is a special month because it was in March of 1979 that I first met Peg in Chico at a women's conference. Those of you who are a little older will remember that women's conferences were the most exciting things on earth in 1979. It was though no women had ever seen each other before. So we were there and we had a very good time, and we saw each other, and we were together the next 5 days until I moved back to New Jersey.
Wow. Together, as in together, together?
Yes,
together,
we were together, very together.
Yeah.
And I had a long-distance relationship, and indeed, I may not even be here in California if we hadn't started that relationship, because that was a big part of why I did move here, even though there were other reasons, too. I really loved California and wanted to get out of the snow in the east and so forth.
I have to put in a plug here for Herb Cain, the columnist of the San Francisco Chronicle. I lived in the city for 20 years, and he said in Chico, people thought Velveeta was an exotic cheese. So it was an extremely unlikely place for two lesbians to meet each other, really, really. And neither of us has ever been back to Chico. Mm. But after our relationship as lovers eased into friendship, very successfully, I think.
Yes, definitely. We've stayed very close friends, even though we haven't always lived. Peg moved away to Maine in what year, Peg, did you move?
97.
So, but Peg comes often to visit California, and I did go once to Korea, Maine, where she lives. If you've never heard of it, wow, you should hear of it.
what is it?
It's just a very, very small town with 100 or so people and a lot of fishermen and lobster.
So Peg, are there a lot of lesbians or gay people, gay men that live there?
Well, surprisingly, there are, because the local bed and breakfast was run by two gay men from Boston. So people would vacation in our village, and then if they were retired or about to be retired, they decided to stay. So we're about a third of the population, would you say, Donna, about a third, and possibly a fourth, but pretty significant.
For 100
Maine.
People?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. It's a great place. There's a lobster woman in her 80s now who is a well-known figure who's a lesbian, an out lesbian, and it's a lot of people have come to Maine, and you wouldn't think of it as the ideal place for retirement, but it is for some people.
So tell us about your how old were you when you went to this 1979 to a women's conference?
I can't remember exactly then, and I don't subtract well in my head, but it was 38 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And
so,
now I'm 83 years old. And
I'm 77, almost 77.
So how was it back then to participate as lesbians in a women's conference?
It was exciting. It was euphoria. Robin Morgan was there, I remember, a woman named Baba Copper, who wrote a great book called Over the Hill about aging and ageism and lesbians. She was there prancing around in priestess garb. That was a little new agey influence.
What was the theme of the conference?
I don't remember.
Was it a writing conference?
It was a women's studies conference.
Oh, women's studies conference.
I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, of course, it was full of San Francisco feminists, very high energy meeting, and I rode home with a friend of ours, and she said, you know, Mathilde's only going to be here a week, so you better make your move tomorrow. So we met at the Owl and the Monkey Coffee House. Remember that, too?
Yes. Near Golden Gate Park. Then about the after the conference, the next day we met. And okay. It was an electric moment.
And Barbara Hammer, the filmmaker, was living in this house with Mathilde's friend Corky. So there were the four of us. Mm-hmm. It was lovely.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It was a very exciting time.
Yeah.
It was. San Francisco had a women's bank, a women's auto shop, a women's restaurant. Valencia Street had a restaurant and entertainment center. There was a women's bathhouse. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Good Vibrations.
Yes.
I moved in August of 79, and
this is
I already knew Peg, obviously, and I had these great ideas of working with older and old lesbians. I didn't know any really old ones then. They were all in the closet, but the older ones we knew were over 40. That seemed really old.
Right.
I was almost 50, as I remember, so I felt really old, but Peg helped me get started, and what I wanted to do was working with the older lesbians. And she introduced me to a woman named Dottie Fowler, who's no longer alive, a charming woman, and she was just starting a support group, and I began to lead that group as a professional. I was already a licensed professional. And it caused quite a stir. Today, there are a million support groups around, but People didn't know who older lesbians were, and they were very interested. So I was asked to speak at a lot of conferences and panels and at the university and all around to say, who are these people? And so the group kind of took off, and all this was volunteer work for me, by the way. And so after that, people got interested in starting real programs in the city, and Peg really helped me get started in all of that, that I have continued until now. So
she helped
I'm
you
calling
like
a volunteer junkie. I've been a volunteer since I was 8 years old in something or other. But this was a project. I never knew how long it would take. But as you see, the housing for LGBT seniors is just going to open this week in San Francisco. And I've been working on it, really, on that part of the project over 30 years.
Are you going to be there?
Oh, yes, I'll be there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's quite a tribute to you, Mateel. Yeah.
The real building will start being built. This is an older building on the campus where it will be 5065 Laguna. there will be a huge building of about 88 units that will be built in the next few years. They're ready to dig in the ground for that.
But right now, for the open house that's happening on the 23rd of March, are people, is it ready to receive people to move in?
There are already about 16 apartments in the old building that was already built, and that is considered a historic building. They couldn't tear it down.
Uh-huh.
So that will have those apartments and the offices of Open House. That's the name of the organization, Open House.
It's kind of confusing for people who, like me, when I first saw it, oh, they're having an open house. Mm-hmm. But it's really a name of an organization, Open House.
Right.
One word.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is a ribbon cutting, and I don't know what you call it, when a building first opens. You know,
a ribbon cutting, yeah.
Ribbon cutting.
Breaking, yeah. Like breaking ground.
Right, uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So, and in the meantime, Peg was just getting her first book started, and I remember driving around California with her trying to find a publisher because no one wanted to publish lesbian books in 1979, so Peg has a great story to tell.
Yeah, so, Peg, why don't you tell us before the story, tell us about the book.
Before the story, I had submitted the manuscript of Lesbian Path to every women's publisher at the time. Nobody wanted to take it. I think more that they were small and underfunded. They certainly liked the idea. And it ended up with a publisher named Andre D'Angelo. I thought Angel Press would be a feminist press. Wrong. Andre D'Angelo was a bit of a loose screw, and he wanted to put the title of the book as Lost in the Love Game on Lesbos.
Oh, Lordy.
Yes, and in the catalog of Angel Press, Lesbian Path is on the across the page from The Life of John Wayne. And then later on, he stopped paying royalties, so I thought I needed legal help, and I got help from Boo Price, who was the lawyer for the Michigan Women's Music Festival, and he finally paid royalties. But then I got the idea that I should really get the plates for the book. In those days, book plates were huge. Mm. And he had a couple of lesbian workers who were there at Angel Press, and he had badmouthed me enough. They thought I was a terrible person. But when they caught on that the guy was cheating me, they got in touch with me, and they said, we're going to get the plates for the book of the book for you, and then you can publish it on your own. And I said, well, won't he notice that the plates are missing? And they said, Peggy can hardly find his way to the desk. So they stole the Lesbian Path book plates and hid them in their garage in Pacific Grove. And I got down there in my beat-up old Dodge. It's a good thing it was an old Dodge and not a smaller car, because these book plates were very large. And
like, can you describe them, like, by measurements? Or?
Well, no, but just think of an old Dodge Dart's trunk, mm-hmm. back trunk. So by then, I was in touch with Barbara Greer, who did NIAID Press. You probably know she had a big press. And she said she'd distribute the book if I could get it printed. Her printers would take it on. So I made up the name Labyrinth Books so that I could have a name that sounded like a real publisher. But, of course, it was just me. So she took it on. And a few years later, in San Francisco, a gay man named Don Allen, who was a very established publisher there, he did Buddhist books and poetry books and gay and lesbian books. So he took it on, and it had a long run after that. When he died, City Lights got copies of the book, and they sent me out the remaining copies. They were going to pulp it, which is the word for destroying books, which is, of course, a terrible thing to do. And so instead I rescued some, and they shipped them out to me. And that's about the lesbian path. Mathilde's in there, by the way, telling the story of her long friendship with Corky Wick, who's a lesbian activist and prominent lesbian in San Francisco community.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was looking for Mathilde's name in the index, and I couldn't find it until I realized that you were using your...
My married name at the time, yeah.
So you are listed as Mathilde Poor,
right,
in this book. Mm-hmm. And so you were married?
Yes.
To a man?
Right.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I was invited and married a long time to a very charming and very brilliant man named Harold Poor, who died of AIDS in 91, or 92, mm-hmm. January of 92, actually. We have children together, and he was a gay man. Peg knew him.
Yes, he was a wonderful man.
And had many, many talents, and was a wonderful professor at Rutgers in the history department.
Yes, the last day of class, students got up and clapped, which is rather rare for a college professor to get that kind of mm-hmm. acclaim. And another thing about Harold was that he encouraged a number of lesbians to get their doctorates in his history program so that he could encourage them and help them along. And quite a number of lesbians are in mm-hmm. academia today, I think, because of Harold's support and encouragement.
Mm-hmm. Was that your story, too? Because I know you have a PhD in history, Mathilde.
Yeah, I did teach some years, mm-hmm. About 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I can say different things I did are in kind of 10-year batches, because after that I was 10 years as a therapist, psychotherapist, pretty much solely that. And then the next 10 years I worked at Kaiser, so I was doing social work and psychotherapy and starting groups and things like that at Kaiser, developing things. I love developing things. So I did that in my volunteer work, and I did it in my professional work, mm-hmm. too.
Wow. Mathilde also started a group for lesbian mothers and their children. They'd have picnics and get-togethers. And mm-hmm. That was something that hadn't existed before Teal created it.
Well, there was one in New York for little bitty kids, lesbians with little kids, but the first one for lesbians with teenagers and even a few grandmothers were in the group toward the end of it. That was the first, I think, in the whole country or ever, any place. And it was an open group. It ran for about 9 years or something, and many wonderful stories came out of that group. Of lesbians who were hiding, lesbians whose children were taken away from them and who had to try to get them back. And I'm still in touch with some of those mothers from that group. But over time, many, many people came to that group. It was very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, Peg, you're all the way here from Maine, so we want to hear about more accomplishments from you. I know you have another book. You've written so many articles. Tell us about this new and upcoming book of yours.
Well, let me say first that I left the glories of San Francisco to be with Donna in Maine, which was quite a culture shock and change, which in retrospect was a good move to make. I'd been teaching at City College, and they had a so-called golden handshake, which doesn't look like golden anymore. It's more like brass or pewter, maybe. And I was working then part-time at the University of Maine teaching women's studies, introduction to LGBT studies. I loved doing that because of the students who came. And I even did online classes in LGBT studies. And I'm such a technophobe that I have to laugh when I think of doing an online class because I really was fumbling around. But I had the leisure when I moved to Maine to write a book that I've been thinking about for a long time. I'd gone to San Francisco State when they the first batch of master students in gerontology was a lot was opened up for master's degree, and I stayed in that program. And then City College, the lawyer, the union lawyer, got jobs with tenure for 23 English professors. So it was quite an amazing turn of events. So instead of becoming a gerontologist, I stayed in my job as an English instructor at City College. But at any rate, I had a chance to write down what I've been thinking about for a long time about aging. And I called the book Learning to Be Old, which is, of course, partly facetious because you don't have to learn to be old. And the subtitle was Gender, Culture, and Aging. So it's a women's studies book, a few paragraphs devoted to men and male aging. And the rights have just been sold in Korea. So now this book, which came out in 2003, again in 2009 and in 2013, will be out in a Korean edition. Mm-hmm. And then later, I wanted to publish a book, a collection of literature on aging. There's been a lot of age denial, as you know, and the society isn't very aging positive, really, and a lot of ageism and discrimination. So it was important to me to get the humanities input into the field of gerontology, which is very often seen as a medical field or a social work field, people who need help. But then there's the history of aging, philosophies of aging, and aging in other cultures, and literature about aging. So the humanities have a huge role to play in aging. And this book, which came out, I wanted to say last month, but it's March now. It came out in January 2017. Fierce with Reality, Literature on Aging. The title comes from an author named Florida Scott Maxwell. She was a retired psychologist, and when she was in her late 80s, she said, "When you look back over your whole life and claim all your experiences, you become fierce with reality." And since fierceness is not a quality we associate with older people, I thought it would be a useful title. So I will be promoting it at the Tucson Book Festival in March in a couple weeks. And I have 2 hours in a pavilion at the campus of the University of Arizona to hawk this book. The other, you know, Ann Padgett and Barbara Kingsolver and women of that ilk get booths to do their book promotion. But it'll be a great occasion. They expect over 100,000 people, and there'll be 350 authors. It makes me think, just like, isn't that typically American to have something so big, really, where the books would be like commodities?
Mm. Well, that's quite an accomplishment. Thank you.
That. I love that title, Fierce with Reality.
Yes. You have to claim where you've been and what you've done, and it seems a good thing to do in later life.
Mm-hmm. So that's what you've been doing. You've been so you're not retired, or are you retired?
Well, that's a good question. I've stopped teaching at City College I'm getting mixed up. In Maine. I'm in Maine now, right? I stopped teaching at the University of Maine in 2011, and then I got a chance to do a senior Fulbright in Austria for a while, and I'm going back there with Donna in April for an aging conference, and the panel I'm on will be on research on LGBT aging. And the panel will be me, a man named Andy King from England, who will be talking about representations of older men in Australia and England, and then a friend of mine named Jane Trays, who did a book in England, Lives of Older Lesbians. And somewhere else at the conference will be a young woman named Linda Hess, who's a German scholar, and she did a dissertation called Queer Aging. Catchy title. And she is interested in fiction in North America that had older lesbian characters. So she'll probably talk about Jane Rule in that mm-hmm. wonderful book, Memory Board.
Wow. Thank you for bringing these titles up. I don't know about these. Do you? I haven't heard about them. These books on aging in the LGBTQ community. Mm. Yeah.
Mathilde certainly was one of the pioneers. And the field now has gotten a little more recognition, but I think 20 years ago, anyone interested in gay or lesbian studies, gay or lesbian aging studies, that number was quite small. Mm. Now it's a little larger. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. About all these books that Peg has written, I'd like to say that we all call her Peg, but on the books, it says Margaret Cruikshank. If anyone looks up the books online or Amazon or even Wikipedia.
Thanks, Jill. It's nice to have a
Wikipedia. Promoter. Yeah, we looked you up on Wikipedia.
She's famous.
Before break, Cher's going to read that little paragraph. I mean, that says a lot.
Okay, I'm going to read the paragraph that you can find in Wikipedia, and then we're going to take our music break. And before our music break, Mateel is going to introduce the song that we're going to play. But I'll just read a couple sentences from the Wikipedia about Margaret Cruikshank. Margaret Louise Cruikshank is an American lesbian feminist writer and academic. Cruikshank began teaching in 1968 and was one of the first American academics to be out during the time when gay rights was just a fledgling idea. Her research and educational work focuses on awareness and acceptance of lesbian academia and the exclusion of lesbian literature and criticism from traditional literature studies and women's studies. Her work has been published in Gay Community News, Radical Teacher, the Journal of Homosexuality, and The Advocate. And it goes on and on and on. So, Margaret Cruikshank, everybody.
I'll have to look up that article.
And, Mateel, why don't you introduce the song that we're going to play for our music break?
I picked this song by Dorothy Fields, who was a woman lyricist in the 30s and 40s. She may have written into the 50s, but dozens and dozens of songs everyone knows. And we don't hear as much about her as we do like people like Cole Porter and Irving Berlin and Gershwin and stuff, but she was really important. So the song I picked is Pick Yourself Up, Dust Yourself Off and Start All Over Again, because I feel that says something about my own life and what's been important to me, because I've worked for over 30 years on the same projects and they've been very successful, but you really have to stick with them, and lots of ups and downs in those projects to keep them going, and dedication. So here's the song.
Dust myself off, start all over again. Don't lose your confidence if you slip. Be grateful for a pleasant trip and pick yourself up, dust yourself off and start all over again. Work like a soul inspired till the battle of the day is won. You may be sick and tired, but you'll be a man, my son. Don't you remember the famous men who had to fall to rise again? They picked themselves up, dust themselves off, and started all over again.
That was Diana Krall singing Pick Yourself Up. And we're in studio, if you just joined us, with Mateel Rothschild and Peg Cruikshank. And we were talking about what you guys were doing in San Francisco. And we'd like to change the conversation just a little bit to more personal stories of yours about, you know, you're in your late 70s, early 80s, both of you. And, you know, how did you know you were gay? How old were you? How were the times back then? You know, because Di's approaching 60. I'm a little over 60. So you have some years on us, and I'm sure that your stories are different than exactly what's happening these days when kids seem to be so free, at least around here. So, Peg, would you like to start?
Sure. I was in grad school when I came out. I was 25, I think, maybe 26. It was a Loyola University, a very Catholic place. And I went out a few times with a man who I'm sure was a gay man. But my roommate and I became lovers, to the surprise of both of us, I think. And it was so secretive in those days. We didn't tell a soul. We felt good about ourselves. We felt comfortable with what we were doing and feeling. We wouldn't use the L word. I think we were women who fell in love and probably had in the back of our minds that marriage would be our eventual fate, but neither of us had any interest in pursuing that line. And we separated because we had different jobs. English department jobs were beginning to disappear. So I was a late bloomer. And I think my first lover would not consider herself a lesbian anymore, which is too bad. And then I had a lover when I was teaching in Iowa. And I'm glad I wasn't tarred and feathered and driven out of town, because my student lover was the granddaughter of the biggest hog farmer in the county. Very conservative Christian, Dutch Reform. And then I went on from that, those experiences, and finally met Donna, love of my life, at Logan Airport outside of Boston.
I hear that's quite a story.
At the airport, yes. And people say, well, you picked her up or she picked you up. But it wasn't like that at all. I was waiting for the bus, and I didn't know if I was in the right place. And she came over and said, well, I'm going to Bangor, too. So that was fine. And then we got on the bus from into Portland from Boston, and we'd missed the last bus to Bangor. Uh-huh. So Donna, being a practical woman, said if we shared a room, we could save on hotel expenses.
Oh, what a line.
What a line. But you see, I hadn't come out to her because there were none of the clues, like, did you hear Chris Williamson or Rita Mae Brown? Or we hadn't exchanged any of the code words.
Well,
so I wasn't going to come out to her because I thought she'd freak out sharing a hotel room with a lesbian. My God.
So then
the next day we went up to Orono, and Donna went to her work on the coast in Korea, and I was teaching that summer. So I stayed up in Orono, and weeks passed. I didn't have a car. And then we took a trip to Canada, remember? We went to New Brunswick. And by the end of that trip, we were beginning to feel our way towards coming out, and each of us had a sad breakup. So that was one thing we had in common. And in her house, there was driftwood from the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, which is a favorite place of mine in Minnesota. And that just amazed me that she not only knew that area, but had been canoeing up there. So one thing led to another, and I postponed my return to City College. And I think I went from the airport to my first class. And then that fall, Donna had a conference in San Francisco. She was presenting material at this home healthcare managers, and she stayed for 16 days.
With you?
With me. Oh, yes. Oh. And we went to, instead of going to the conference, we went out to Point Reyes, and there was a forest fire, and we got out of Point Reyes and went to her relative's house because they thought she'd been at the conference, but we were out at Point Reyes. I'm sure our clothes reeked of the forest fire.
You didn't even go to the conference?
Well, a couple days. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But the 16-day break from work was kind of unusual. And then one day at the English department, the secretary said, Peg, someone has sent you 24 roses. Who is that? You know, department secretaries are often the ones who know what's going on. So, Mateo, it's your turn.
After that wonderful story, I'm not sure where to start.
Well, before
all I can say is that, yes, I did have a relationship with a very nice gal when I was in high school, and it was so secretive and so scary. I said, never again. Not this again. I'm not going to live in this kind of scariness. And I went off to college, and I kept to that word. I really kept.
What was scary?
It was so scary. Well, in college, if you got caught, you were sent home immediately.
Oh.
And I was even on a panel that sent people home.
Oh, no! You didn't tell me that?
Well, you know, the dorms were very large, and in the dorms there were officers, and the officers were the ones that first reported things, and then they went to officials. And it was very scary. In my dorm, a woman, I'm sure, was not a lesbian. Her roommate accused her of being a lesbian just because she wanted to borrow a bra and because she stared at her sometimes and reported that. And this girl got sent home and probably ruined her life forever. I don't know. But small things like that were so scary. So no one was going to say anything in college. I was at University of Wisconsin in Madison. There were over 25,000 students. So, and still there was that kind of fear.
But I have a question, though.
Yes.
Before, you said when you were in high school, it was scary.
Oh, well.
And you said you would never do it again.
Right.
So what was high school like?
Well, I only knew two other people who, two women who were together, and they wanted to ride around in a car together on Friday nights. I mean, you had to hide or go somewhere no one would see you.
We're laughing, but it's sad, you know?
It's sad.
It's sad,
yeah,
but
of course.
I had a really good group of friends in high school, and I'm still friends with them, but this particular girl wasn't in that group. And I can't say why, but, you know, they're little cliques in high school. And so I don't know. My mother didn't know her, so my mother didn't want me running around with her and maybe suspected something like, why would you be with this girl that's not in your group or something? But we stuck it out until she graduated. She graduated before I did. It was just terrifying to me. I would have been mortified if anyone had found out. And so that's the way it was. So I said, I'm going to go off to college and it won't be that way again. And it wasn't. And but then I lived all over, and I was not with another woman for many, many years. My official coming out was in the 1970s, after many, many years. And in the meantime, I was married and everything. And I don't know how many of you listening remember this, but gays used to get married so that they could have a life.
Men and women.
Men and women would get married so that he would have a life. I mean, I got my doctorate at Columbia University in New York, and there was no way that a professor would recommend you for a job in academia if they knew you were gay in 1960 or 1970 even. So if you were married and you appeared to be straight and they liked you, they would recommend you for jobs and promote you, you know, in your career. So it was very important to get married. However, we did fall in love. That's a really important part. We really fell in love, and we were very much in love until we got divorced. And a big part of the divorce was gay liberation, that if you want to be yourself, you should just be free and whatever. And we did. We separated and got divorced. That's what happened, you know, and we remained very, very, very good friends and saw each other a lot and even traveled together some.
Children.
Yes, I have two wonderful children who are now in their 50s. They're hardly children. And I have 8 grandchildren, fabulous young people who are all now sort of grown. The youngest ones are freshmen in college. So I feel very, very fortunate that from that marriage,
so
that I have this wonderful family.
I have to jump in with the story when same-sex marriage was approved in the Supreme Court. One of the grandchildren called and said, "Grandma, let's boogie." They were so accepting.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. Yeah. I mean, how you were saying that your husband was gay and you were gay, and how did your kids find out, or when did they find out, and then how did they take it, and then now you have grandchildren, and how did they have lesbian for grandmothers, and you and Joni, and how does that all work?
I can say that the years the children knew they had two gay parents were some of the most difficult years of my life, and probably of their lives, that they were not accepting and they were very scared, and their friends often didn't like the idea and the parents didn't like the idea. It was a little bit better when I moved to California. It was very threatening to the children because they have to come out to their friends because the mother's a lesbian, and that is not easy to do when you're a teenager. It's just very hard. It was then very, very hard. So it was, I know I put a pressure on them, and that's why the support group for lesbian mothers of older children was so important, to help us all learn how to deal with those issues, because the children were wild. It wasn't like it is now. They were so upset. I mean, one day my son just cried and cried and cried in the living room and said if anything else bad happened, he didn't think he wanted to live because of the pressure of having gay parents. So I can see where they came from and a lot of the bad things they went through as teenagers because of that. But my grandchildren are totally accepting. In fact, the one who's now a freshman in college writes these sweet texts to me and Joni saying she loves us both and we've gone through so much as lesbians. She wants to hear all about it one day and all these wonderful things. And they all have gay friends. Two of them had a gay male roommate all during college and picked that person to live with them, thought it'd be fun to have him with them. It's totally to them an open world. They're just not like their parents were. But now my children, I mean, they're middle-aged. They're very, very accepting. And it took a long time. It really did. And all I can say is parents in that situation need a lot of support.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, that you were there for the group in San Francisco.
How long were you together?
How long was who together?
We're going to ask you about you now, Joni. She's going to talk about you now.
Uh-huh.
How long have you two been together?
Here
did you meet?
Over here is my Joni, Joan Zimmerman, who I've been partners with for 16 years now. But I did know Joni about 10 years before we ever got together. Maybe it was a good thing, but she was with someone else all that time. And then when she became single, friends were saying, Joni's single, you should get together. And we both resisted it a lot, but here we are, and we're together, very happily together still after 16 years, even though after they really wanted us together, they were saying, oh, we don't think it's going to last. But it's also lasted. So, Joni, you want to say something,
that.
Joni? You want to say something?
She'll need to be on mic if she comes up.
You have to come over by the mic.
Here she comes.
Yeah.
What do you want to say, Joni?
Yeah, this is Joan, and I wanted to say...
Joan.
Yeah, when I really got interested in Mateel, she would, you know, drive us around, and we had a friend, and... I said to Mateel, would you please take me home so I can get my mail? And this friend of ours said, isn't that
an expensive mailbox?
Yes.
To live in an apartment where you just go and collect your mail?
Yeah, so I moved shortly after that. And she's been a wonderful partner, and I think that anybody that has the nerve to be together,
we want to hear you, so talk on the mic.
I'm sorry. I think it's wonderful because it's so nice to be able to be with someone that really cares about you. And now that I'm getting older, she's older, but I'm a little younger.
I had a friend, and she used to say to me, "Don't kiss her." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "I know you. You'll kiss everybody in San Francisco. Don't kiss her." And how long did we date before I would?
A couple of months.
Yes. Yeah, right. And then you decided you would go on your own.
Right.
And I wondered what that was all about, because I thought we were getting together, you know, very nicely. And she said, no.
Oh, thank you, Joni.
Thank you
so much.
We're together.
We're going to ask Peg now to talk a little bit about... I was curious about questions around kids with you guys. If you had kids, or if you have nieces and nephews, or
family.
Neither of us has had a child. We have cousins and nieces and nephews. Donna's an only child, and I never really wanted children. I have a lesbian sister who's never wanted children either, which makes me wonder about the early messages we got from our mother that... Mm-hmm. Don't do this. Yeah. This is not fun.
Do you have other sibs besides a sister?
I have a brother.
Uh-huh.
And he rejected me for quite a while for being a lesbian.
Oh.
He said it was fear of the unknown. But now he's very supportive, very supportive.
Good.
And Donna's family, her father recently died. Her relatives there have treated us like a couple and have been very, very accepting. And this is rural conservative Kansas, so we're pleased about that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like a lot of older lesbians, our friends are our family now, really. Yeah. And that's one of the themes of LGBT aging.
Yeah.
Brian DeVries, who was at San Francisco State in Gerontology, wrote about that, friendships among gay people, men and women. I think that's really important, because even if we're on good terms with our families, they don't understand our social histories the way our friends understand them.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
Well, how old were you when you knew you were a lesbian, Peg?
Well, that's a good question. I was certainly attracted to women and girls. And in college, the psych professor, this was a Benedictine college, the psych professor interrupted a lecture to say, "Girls, if you know of any homosexuals on this campus, it's your duty to report them." And I was baffled. I don't know if I related that to myself or not, but I was damn sure I would never turn anyone in to the nun authorities. And then I thought, how would I know? How do you know homosexuals on campus? Do they look different from the rest of us? So I was really perplexed. And when I went back to college for my 50th reunion, I met some gay college students, and I told them that story. They were dumbfounded. They could not understand the professor being so, and she was head of the psych department, right? She had this fancy PhD from University of Minnesota in psychology. They just were surprised, and that made me understand the importance of telling younger people what we've come through and get them to reflect on the ugly early days, the nasty, mean things that were done to us and people like us, and how, despite all our progress now, it's important to hold in our minds that history of discrimination and real hatred for difference.
Do you have any stories about that you've experienced, Peg? I'm just curious.
Well, I was rent an apartment in San Francisco, and the woman said, "Now, no men may stay here overnight." I said, "That won't be a problem." Mateel started to come to stay overnight. And that wasn't the only reason I was evicted, but I thought, hell's bells, this is San Francisco. I didn't move from the Midwest to be kicked out of my apartment by a landlady in San Francisco. And I was actually fired from the University of San Francisco, but not for being a lesbian. It would have been a glorious story if I had been, but they violated my contract, and I sued them, and I actually won. The judge said I was never to say anything publicly about that lawsuit, so all I will say is that I bought myself a Toyota and drove it for many years after the end of the lawsuit.
Well, thank you both so much for being with us. We are at the end of our show, and before we go off air, we like to ask our guests for words of wisdom to our listeners. And we'd like to know what you want them to know.
One thing I'd like listeners to know is that aging can be really a wonderful experience if you're healthy. And things open up in late life that surprise you and make you happy. And there are so many LGBT people for whom I hope that kind of experience, a blossoming, a change, something enriching and deepening that can happen only because you've passed, say, your 70th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So keep on trucking is my word of wisdom.
Thank you, Peg. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would like to say that here in Santa Rosa, I live at Fountain Grove Lodge, which is a predominantly gay and lesbian community living and also assisted living, and it's the first one in the country that offers assisted living. And after all my work in San Francisco that is still not quite completed and is for low-income families, which I'm very happy about, it's wonderful to have Fountain Grove Lodge right here in Santa Rosa that I live in. I'm very happy there. But I would like to encourage people to always get out in the community and do work, that it's the most satisfying to be a part of a community and know you're giving of yourself for that. It's been the best part of my life. Professional life doesn't compare to what you do in a community.
Mm-hmm. Especially in these times with the election and the yes. results mm-hmm. of the election.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It's really
Absolutely.
Important. Mm-hmm.
Is there, I'm just curious, just 30 seconds, is there, what's your focus now at this time in your life forward? What's that one thing you might want to accomplish?
Healthy aging within a structure of friendship of gay men and lesbians and bisexuals and transgender people.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to say that it's hard to keep on recreating your life, but you keep doing it at every age. And I just hope I can stay open to that, that life is a kind of improvisation, really. We don't know where we're going with it, and that we be open to having many new experiences mm-hmm. always.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, thank
that's
you.
What
thank
I, you. I try to keep in mind.
Thank you, Mateel. Thank you, Joan. Peg.
Thank you for having us.
Oh,
it's
you're
been
so
a
welcome.
Pleasure.
Yes, it's really
been
fun.
Joni and Donna, even though you're basically silent,
but
Donna,
thank you.
We appreciate very much you being here. Joni, thanks for your words. We want you, everyone, to remember that, like Mateel and Peg, you too can be living proof that through sharing your passions, you can use your creativity as another way to help the world. And you too can be visible and vibrant in telling your story. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month. Until then, good night.
Support for Outbeat Radio and KRCB-FM comes from members and from Sonoma West Publishers, bringing you the Sonoma West Times and News, the Healdsburg Tribune, and the Windsor Times, your weekly sources for local news, events, and community affairs.
Still so many answers, I don't know. There are so many answers. Realize that to question is how we go. To question is to go. So
be sure to tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Radio's Outbeat Music with Michaela Kennan. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB-FM Windsor Santa Rosa, Radio 91. Online all the time at krcb.org. It's just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. Open Space District is next.
What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never too late to try. What have you done today to make you feel proud? Mm-hmm. You could be so many. Today.
change, yeah. Do it today, yeah. I can feel my spirit rising, change, yeah. We need a change, yeah. So do it today, yeah. 'Cause I can see a place.